Welcome to Jewish History with Rabbi David Katz, connecting the human side to Jewish history. For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.
Hi, it's Wednesday morning, and I'm going to say a few words about the matzav at the sponsorship, I guess, of Broyers Together. You know that website. This is from James Mayer. For the occasion is the birthday of of Howard Meir Chaim Yehuda, who I've gotten to know in all kind of ways, and I actually met him in Baltimore, and now he sent me a book the other day. Happy birthday, Chaim Yehuda. We just missed each other. He was in D.C. the other day to hear oral arguments, I believe, in the United States Supreme Court, being a lawyer. And anyway, so we do wish him a happy birthday. I'm happy to do this, turning into a reporter over here. But the situation is so crazy in the Middle East, obviously, and it's taking twists and turns, that, you know, you can't talk about somebody who lived 500 years ago when history is happening in front of our eyes, although we don't have the hindsight, you know, to analyze it with the historical dispassion. It's not possible for any normal person to be dispassionate about the situation. As I speak, as you know, Biden came to Israel. This is unprecedented. There's never been an American president who went to Israel, certainly in wartime, and Rabbeinu Shalom works things out. As you know, he was supposed to go see the Arabs, and they said no. So that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's a perfect visit. You just go to Israel and then come back. That's the best way. And I know I see a lot of speculation. People write to me all day long and send articles from this journalist. They think that everybody knows how the war is going to be fought, which means nobody knows anything. But one thing is clear to me, I think, and that is, and I mentioned the other day, you have to keep in mind that there's a huge difference between what the fighting in the in Gaza on the one hand, and the Hezbollah and the Lebanon thing on the other, the northern front, so to speak. And I know it's acting up, and that's goofy, in my opinion, why Biden went over there. And the difference is, thanks to his geography, if there's a war in Gaza, as it happens, it's happening in front of our eyes, there's a finite number of people there. Meaning, I don't know how many people the Hamas has, and I'm sure they're going to fool everybody having more than we thought. And isn't it amazing they're still shooting rockets? They got a Velta rockets, which is, you know, crazy. And they're not being supplied by anybody because they're far away from everybody else. So they have it stored up. So it just goes to show you who you're dealing with. And it goes to show you the perfectly understandable mistake that Israel made. I mean, I hear where they, I know how this happened. It's very unfortunate. But if it hadn't been for this attack on Simchas Torah, you would not have any kind of consensus in Israel to go fight a bloody war in against Hamas. I mean, that's, we can all dump on Bibi now, and they obviously made big mistakes and were asleep at the switch. But remember, 2 weeks ago and before that, there was no consensus in Israel about fighting a bloody war with casualties. There is now, but there wasn't then. And without a consensus like that, a democracy cannot fight a long and bloody war. That's one of the weaknesses of democracy. There are plenty of, you know, positive things of a democracy, but one of the weaknesses is what I just said. When you're not a democracy, you can fight a long and bloody war. You don't care what the public thinks. That's like Putin in Ukraine. But when you are a democracy, you've got to have the oilam behind you, or else the protests and disaffection affects the soldiers themselves. You know, half the people in the army in Israel are leftists. And I don't mean that in a bad way. No, they're, you know, chilonim, liberal, peaceniks. Nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying that. Therefore, you know, they're the type that say, what am I here for? because of what the Hamas did 2 weeks ago, so now you know, there's a what you call moral clarity, which is a precious commodity. Moral clarity is not possible to achieve, particularly in a democracy, and it takes a shocking event, like Pearl Harbor was in America, you know. It takes a shocking event for people to realize what they should have realized beforehand, which is all the Arabs, especially Hamas, would like to kill everybody. Just that's how it goes. You know, if I would say that 2-3 weeks ago, people would say, oh, it's some kind of right-wing nut, you know, propaganda and all the rest of it. Now, it's like a Dover Pushit. But it's unfortunate that there had to be so many carbonas to prove that Dover Pushit. And, you know, that's how it goes. Now, they do have the moral clarity at the moment. And Lochamim al Habayit, they call it in Israel. You're fighting for your house. And, you know, things are terrible. But the Hamas in Gaza and those other guys there, whoever, you know, the different groups are, that's a finite area. Israel can go in there militarily. I hope there aren't losses, but, you know, it's a tough situation. It's a finite area, and there are no reinforcements because look at the geography. You can't get stuff in there except through Egypt, like the corridor I said before. And I don't know if Egypt can send in, wants to send in, will send in whole groups of jihadists and weapons and things like that. Probably through these convoys that have food and water probably contain weapons too. It's unfortunately the way it goes. But that's a limited number. So you see what I'm saying. Israel can grind them down. Because if you're not getting reinforcements and you're losing people in combat, I'm talking about the enemy, eventually you get ground down. That's the arithmetic of war. Masha en kein, if chas v'shalom, there opens up a northern front, like the Hezbollah in Lebanon, that kind of thing. Because they are open to the rest of the Arab world, the Muslim world. Jihadist fighters can flow there from all over the place. You could drive from Afghanistan through Iran, through Iraq, through Syria, into Lebanon, and then attack Israel. And the leaders of Hezbollah and all are very smart. That's exactly, I think, what they would do. They bring in tons of other people, not their own soldiers, and let them lose, you know, those guys who are glad to die in battle. And Israel would be facing an endless stream of attackers. And that can grind Israel down. You understand? If you have the Gansavel flowing there, like, I mean, the Muslims did this to the Americans in Iraq, and before that to the Russians in Afghanistan. They just got people from all over the place. It was just like too many of them. You see? And they're armed with all kind of rockets and RPGs and this and that and the other. And it turns into a hell. This, in my opinion, as far as I can tell, is goofy why America is getting involved to try to block that so that Israel can conduct a war which is fighting against a limited, a finite enemy in the Gaza Strip on the one hand, without getting involved in an endless war in the north. And I have some friends, I'm not going to give details, who told me, I mean, you know, it's on the inside, that, you know, if you noticed on the roads, on the New Jersey Turnpike and places like that, there are large army convoys going here and there. The U.S. military is actually getting ready in case there turns into some kind of war in the north. Now, I have no idea how exactly they would intervene, but that's goofy why Biden went over. This is extremely unusual for American president to go to a war zone. I don't think it's ever happened. And a war zone that could turn active any second. And you can be sure, I wouldn't want to be in charge of Biden's Secret Service, you know. They're probably really sweating bullets. And the hope is that by, you know, bringing the threat of America in there, this will cause the Northern Front to hold back. But I don't see that happening. I mean, I hope it does. I don't want it. But, you know, there's no incentive for Iran and these other guys, you know, to do that. What? To get America involved in the war? Good, they like that. You have to understand what the enemies in the United States want is America should always be bogged down in some quagmire somewhere. I mean, you know, we did in Vietnam, we did in Iraq, we did in other places. I mean, that's how it goes in that part of the world. Now, it's not exactly the same thing because Israel is not South Vietnam. And by reinforcing Israel. You know, they have a strong partner, but we could definitely be holding by Gog and Magog. it's not funny, simply because the stakes are very high and the weapons are very big, and there is an axis of evil, meaning there is now an anti-American coalition out there. Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, that's a powerful group, right? Now, in that kind of situation, you never know who goes nuclear. Because once you ratchet this up, it gets pretty scary. And since it's the Middle East, so people say, I'd do anything rather than give in, you know? And you can end up, like I say, with a major conflict. So Eretz Yisrael is facing a tough business. Now, the truth of the matter is, I don't think America trusts Israel, and I don't exactly blame them. It's not like Netanyahu has inspired a lot of confidence, or these other guys, and it doesn't seem like they have any, to me at least, like there's any kind of strategic thinking. The same way that they allowed themselves to be caught with their pants down, it seems the same way they didn't think through, you know, although they're doing it now, how to deal with these existential problems. Now, I'm not underestimating the Israeli situation. I mean, let me put it in simple English. If you're in charge of Israel, you have an existential problem that's not going to go away. The Arabs will always hate you. Some of them will. Probably all of them, but certainly some of them will. And so you can never get mamash a peace. I've said it, you know, it's like usher to say that, you know, but there'll never be a time when all the Arabs will go along with it simply because they think that the Jews stole their land or other things like that. I mean, you know, they always construct arguments for themselves, just like we construct arguments for ourselves. And, you know, it becomes a question of, how should I put it? You know, managing a long-term, very long-term kind of problem. Countries are not very good at that. You understand? There's a problem that doesn't go away. You just manage it. After a while, the managing of the problem becomes the lechatchila option. And that's what happened, obviously, over here. Israel, let me put it this way. Before 2 weeks ago, Israel simply said, listen, the Gaza Strip is going to be what it's going to be. And we'll always have to have, you know, a countervailing force to prevent them from attacking us. And that's how we'll go on forever. You understand? There are 2 million of them there. Next week, there'll be 3 million. And next week, 4 million, 5 million. You have 5 million people in the Gaza Strip. You know, how's that going to work? I don't know. No, this is what Israel said. I don't know. But meanwhile, we're just managing the problem. So I get the VART, but, you know, in the long term, a problem doesn't go away. It just festers and it gets worse. And Hamas, you know, obviously knows all this. And what they did was, I always call it Stalingrad. You know, they turned the Gaza into Stalingrad, meaning they have tunnels and booby traps and things like this. And they've been, you know, so to speak, planning for a time that'll come that Israel invade them. But they want to make it at such a high price, Israel lose so many men that Israel will either not go in, which really worked until last week, or will lose if they go in. I mean, that's clearly their plan. And history is full of cases where armies got messed up in this urban fighting because most armies are not designed for that sort of thing. And one of the great conundrums of modern war, especially in Israel's case, is that really they should just, I mean, from a strictly military point of view, disregarding the humanitarian side, just blow up the whole city. But they can't do that. You understand? And the Hezbollah is very well aware they can't do that. Knowing how to use PR and, you know, the foreign press is an essential part of military strategy, especially on the part of what I would call terrorism or irregular warfare, asymmetric warfare. The Irgun did this in the 1940s. Begin started blowing up the British in the 40s. And the British could have retaliated by killing all the Jews or kicking them out of Israel or something like that. But he knew they wouldn't do that because they couldn't take the PR. And he was right. So the Hamas is obviously figuring in groups like that, that they can use the PR in their way. And it's just interesting, you know, that so far they haven't been able to control the narrative. And I think they underestimated how strongly these images of killing babies and stuff like that would resonate around the world, you know. And they're fighting that. And I don't think they're 100% sure of how to deal with world opinion in that particular way. I mean, to them, so they killed a bunch of Israelis, big deal. So they shechted a bunch of women, big deal. You know, it's not a big deal in their culture. And there are plenty of people around the world that agree with that. You see in America even, people say, oh, I'm glad what they did. But Ruba Deruba is not like that. Ruba Deruba, most people say that this is barbaric and so on and so forth. And so they kind of miscalculated on that, as I said. But ultimately, in terms of luring Israel into a Stalingrad and fighting, they're not 100% wrong. So Israel's going to have a hard time, you know, fighting this battle, I predict. I would like to be wrong in the Gaza, but at the end of the day, it's winnable because they can't get any reinforcements. They're the enemy. They have what they have, and they don't have more than what they have. And so if Israel kills this guy and this guy and that guy and that guy, they can't be replaced, as it were. Masha Enkin, as I said before, when you talk about the north of Syria, then it's a completely different business. Then, you know, then it's endless flow. And I'm not 100% sure what they do about that. And America is plenty worried also. So if the U.S. Army, I repeat, the U.S. Army is mobilizing. And if the American ships are, you know, concentrating in the Eastern Mediterranean and all that kind of business, I mean, they really, really, really hope that this will deter the bad guys. But I don't know. As far as I see, unless America threatens to blow up Iran, there's no real deterrence. You know, there's no reason for them to be deterred, let's put it that way. Because, so they get the American army involved in a fight in Lebanon or a place like that. You know, but what do they care? Now, maybe I'm wrong. The reason I say maybe I'm wrong is, I don't know if you know this, the U.S. has unusually effective air force. Most of us don't know this. The Air Force has like perfected their stuff with a precision that's pretty amazing. You know, I don't know how to do with the laser guided stuff and computer guided bombs and stuff like that. But you can be sure that if that happens and a war breaks out between Israel on the one hand and the bad guys in Lebanon or Lebanon and Syria, and the U.S. gets involved with that, you'll see, let's put it this way, you'll see a lot of American PR and news and things like this talking about the sophisticated American bomb stuff, but that they're killing civilians. And you know how it'll go. And CNN and all the others, they'll show you a family that got killed by the American bombs and things of this nature. And then that'll deteriorate, you know, public support for this enterprise in America. I don't know. You know, we don't know. And when you throw into the thing that we're 1 year away from the elections, think about that. Everything's going to be highly politicized. And how this plays out for Biden, you know, I'm not exactly sure how he cashments this. On the one hand, I tell myself he's trying to show he's more pro-Israel than Trump, which on this past week he's shown himself, you know, to be. On the other hand, you see all these people saying that America's telling Israel, don't go into Gaza, which I don't believe they're doing. I think a lot of this is just media speculation and what I call email speculation. I get all these emails from people. Everybody's a self-appointed military expert. Everybody knows, as far as I can tell, is Aim Brera. What do you mean, Aim Brera? There's no way that Israel can let the Hamas remain in Gaza without being majorly defeated, meaning Israel would be majorly defeated. And that would be a tremendous blow to the morale in Israel. If these guys got away with it and nothing happened to them, the Arabs would boast Yoma Belaila, and I don't blame them. They would say, you know, we beat Israel. We hit them real hard. Yeah, they hit us hard, but big deal. And we'll hit them again next time even harder. there is talk, as you know, about the hostages and things like this, but lechatchila, the whole reason, according to the Hamas and those guys, the whole reason they attacked Israel was precisely to take hostages. I mean, I know they killed people, I get that, but I'm just saying, take hostages to force Israel to do something that Israel hasn't wanted to do now for 10, 15 years, which was exchange 1,000 hostages, you know, Israeli prisoners in jail, because for the Hamas morale, it's tremendously important, just like it is for Israeli morale, that if we have people in jail, we get them out. We take care of our guys. You understand? That's like very important for them as an organization. They want to tell their fellow guys, you get arrested by Israel, we'll eventually get you out. Israel won't want to do it. We'll make them do it anyway. And we'll do it by going in and taking hundreds of hostages, and then Israel have no choice. And I know you start to see some, people in the press saying Israel should do this. But they're wrong. I mean, if Israel does this, then they mamash lost. I mean, then it's an unbelievable, in my opinion, it's an unbelievable blow. And so we're stuck very much like Parshas Noach. In Noach, they had the flood. And after the flood, he sent out the dove, the symbol of peace. But, you know, lo motza hayonam Noach l'kaf raglov. But, you know, each time he tried to send out the dove, it didn't work until finally it worked. Which, as I see it, is a mashal for telling you, it ain't over till the time says it's over. It's only when the dove came back, you know, with Alei Zayis Tarf Bafia, that's where you always get the image of the dove and the the branch in its mouth is a symbol of peace, right? But only when it was the right time. Before that time, it didn't work. And as they say. Having said all that, Biden has done what no other president has done. Never been a president went to Israel, especially in a wartime. Nixon sent him plenty of weapons, and Biden has sent plenty of weapons also. In the Six-Day War, America kind of like didn't intervene, but Israel was winning all the time. President Johnson was, you know, pro-Israel, but didn't want to talk about it. That was his way. You know, he did things behind the scenes. But this guy, Biden, is not doing it behind the scenes. So it's like really, it's really interesting. And he's 80 years old, so let me put it this way. The Rabbanu Shalom so arranged matters that this old guy should become president of the United States with these old-fashioned ideas about Israel. Thank God they're old-fashioned, and they're like pro-Israel. And, you know, as far as I can see, Biden is still holding by the 60s and 70s, which is a good thing, 1960s and 70s, when there was a tremendous consensus in this country pro-Israel. It's before all the Muslim immigrants came in and now trying to create a different consensus. We have a machlokes in America over consensuses, and the population is divided. Yesh v'yesh, those who are pro-Israel. That's all these stories you hear, that people are coming and doing things and saying to Jews, we favor you. And then you have others, like especially Muslim immigrants and people like that, which I don't blame them. It's from their point of view. They see it differently, and they would like to change the country as hard as they can in the other direction. Just imagine if Bernie was a president, or somebody like that, or Elizabeth Warren, or one of these other types. Chas b'chalila, chalila b'chas. Just imagine if Rabbanu Shalom made it that Jeremy Corbyn was the prime minister in England. You see what I'm saying? The bad guys, especially the Persians, you know, play chess. They calculate their moves beforehand. But so does Rabbanu Shalom, okay? And when you look now, the way things are set up, Israel took a big blow at a time when the President of the United States and leaders of other important countries like England, France, and Germany are pro-Israel. It could easily be that the Hamas hit us at a time when the leaders in these countries, especially in Europe, were not pro-Israel. Okay? We're not pro-Israel. And like I say, it's pretty clear to me that this is sort of like preordained. Now, I can't go and I'm not a prophet or anything. I'm just saying my impressions of it. That's all I ever do on a podcast. But, you know, the foreshadowing of events is kind of striking. And it's even more striking when you think it wasn't that long ago we were saying the Sanat Tokyo. We say, Mi Yechim, Mi Yamas, Mi Ba'esh, Mi Ba'mayim, Mi Barash. Mi Bacherev, Imamish came true. So nobody knows how the future is going to play out, but the fact that you have an American president for whatever reason, and even with all the things you want to say that the U.S. is trying to pressure Israel, all the rest of it, I don't think they're trying to pressure Israel in a bad way. It may possibly be, maybe yes, maybe no, that they figure Israel doesn't know what's good for it. And it could be that that's true. You understand? Because I'll say it again, this team over here doesn't sound like the Israelis have things very well thought out. At the end of the day, you have professionals and security professionals, and I know they're very good. But you see, they make gigantic mistakes also. And the biggest mistakes seem to be mistakes about shkafa or perspective. And that's happened in the 73 war, and that can happen now. You can have someone with tremendous, what's the right word, technical expertise. But if your hashkafa is off, then it won't work. So as far as I see, they're coming out reports now, and you saw them also, that soldiers, these girl soldiers said that the Arabs are coming, they're going to attack, and the people said, nah, it's not true. You understand? So that's a failure of hashkafa. You understand? Anyway, so there's plenty to daven for, let's put it that way. But what you really want is they shouldn't open up a big front in the north, because that's an endless supply of soldiers and weapons and stuff. In the south, in Gaza, it's not an endless supply. And to my mind, for what it's worth, that's like the game changer. That's the most important factor. That they have what they have, and they probably have a veldt of weapons and a veldt of tunnels and things like that. I know that because North Korea built it for them. But they have a limited number. So I won't want to be one of the soldiers on the front lines right now and have to fight that, but that seems to me is what's going to happen. So that's my two cents for what it's worth. And as I say, I did this as part of a thing. I also want to say happy birthday to Chaim Yehuda, and we should all hopefully see things turn for a great deal for the better.
For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidovidkatz.com.